Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, July 25th, 2024. Area Democrats rally behind Harris after Biden exit, by Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. Big Bend Democratic activists and their delegates to the Democratic National Convention rallied behind Vice President Kamala Harris this week after President Joe Biden withdrew from the race on Sunday. Texas Democratic delegates held an online meeting Tuesday and voted overwhelmingly, 260-6, to cast their ballots for Harris to be the new party nominee when the National Convention meets in Chicago on August 19th. The trend in many other states has been similar, with some 3,000 delegates pledging to support Harris by Tuesday afternoon and only 1,976 needed for the nomination. This is bound to breathe new life into this electoral season, said Hillary Beebe, a local Democratic activist. And for that reason, I'm really optimistic. But the country's extremely polarized, and it's still going to be a whole lot of work. If Kamala Harris is the nominee, it's going to be inspiring. But we've got to get a female candidate of color across the finish line, and I know every Democrat is ready to do that. On Sunday, I was crying because I felt so sad for President Biden, said Juanita Martinez, Maverick County Democratic Party chair. I mean, I've held his hand before, and he was the kindest, nicest person. And to me, he's one of the best presidents that has ever lived. Martinez, who lives in Eagle Pass, is one of two delegates representing the Tri-County area, which is defined by the 23rd Congressional District that includes Far West Texas. She voted to support Harris in Tuesday evening's meeting. The other delegate, Colette Holt of San Antonio, could not be reached for comment. It seems to me a really promising outlook for the Democrats, said Mary Bell Lockhart, Brewster County Democratic Party chair. It's really kind of a historic position we're in, and it really kills Trump's attack on Biden for being too old. A clear, united path for a Harris nomination also lets Democrats forge ahead with campaigning instead of stalling under the uncertainty of whether Biden would remain in the race, she said. We were on hold as far as the signage, Lockhart said. We hadn't ordered any because it was kind of up in the air. Martinez said her initial sadness turned to enthusiasm with the idea of Harris at the top of the ticket. It's already adding energy, she said, and noted that she has recruited 20 new volunteers who started block walking on Wednesday in Eagle Pass. Beebe said coordination between Presidio, Brewster, and activists under the name Big Bend Democrats and its Political Action Committee will also play a key role in registering voters and getting them to the polls. Presidio County Democratic Party Chair Ramon Rodriguez Aranda announced this week that the party will be launching Seguremos el Voto, Let's Secure the Vote, in September, that will use a variety of platforms, from social media and radio commercials to old-fashioned door-knocking in both English and Spanish to get out the vote. Beebe said it's been a range of emotions since Biden's announcement, but that it was the best decision, and it is yet another tribute to the president. He displayed such humility, and he's passing the torch and giving a younger generation an opportunity, she said. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Senator Cesar Blanco helps Marfa Elementary student Samita Baeza pick out a unicorn-themed backpack at his 10th annual back-to-school backpack giveaway at the Marfa High School Auditorium on Wednesday. Every student in our community deserves the opportunity to start the school year with the confidence to dream bigger, work harder, and achieve more, Blanco said. Financial future of Marfa ISD bleak as new budget talks ensue. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa ISD School Board trustees met this week to review a preliminary budget for the upcoming 2024-25 school year. Similar to last year, the district is anticipating adopting a deficit budget of $1 million or more, a situation that has administrators raising the alarm about the long-term financial viability of the district. Interim Superintendent Arturo Alferez, as well as all school board members with the exception of Renee Gonzalez, were present to hear from Chief Financial Officer Rosella Rivera on the proposed budget for the upcoming school year. Based on the preliminary certified property values from the Presidio County Appraisal District, PCAD, and a tax rate of 0.8216, the district is anticipating earning around $5,035,000 in revenue, Rivera explained. But with the district's expenses, an estimated $1.7 million recapture payment, funds the district sends to the state because it is considered to have, quote, excess wealth, end quote, per student due to the combination of low enrollment and high property values, MISD is likely to be left with an estimated $1,117,000 deficit. Rivera said recapture payments are the killer, leading to the unbalanced budget, and have sharply increased the past few years. By comparison, the district paid $511,000 in recapture for that 2021-22 school year, she said. When asked by the school board members how the recent $530,000 sale of the Blackwell School to the National Parks Foundation would impact their budget, Rivera said the sum was placed into the district's fund balance or savings account so it could gain interest and was not factored into this year's budget. In addition to its recapture payment, which local school leaders experiencing similar issues, including those in Alpine and Fort Davis, have lobbied the legislature to fix, among other funding inequities. Marfa ISD will continue to pay Presidio ISD, a much wealthier district, $48,000 this year to educate children from Redford that attend Presidio but are technically zoned to go to Marfa. School board members also expressed concern about their quarterly payments to the PCAD increasing. The PCAD's budget is made up of payments from local taxing entities, including the cities, school districts, the hospital district, the Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District, and the county. Last year, MISD made quarterly payments of around $49,000 to the PCAD. This year, its quarterly payments are estimated to increase to around $58,800, according to Chief Appraiser Cynthia Ramirez. Ramirez said the primary reason for the increase is due to staff raises, and particularly a raise for herself, due to the increasing difficulty and added responsibilities of her job as a result of new state legislature requirements. The PCAD is also experiencing an increase in costs on their software and hired a new valuation consultant, Richard and Abbott Incorporated, she said. In total, payments from Marfa ISD make up around 36% of the PCAD's budget, while payments from Presidio ISD make up around 16%, Ramirez said. While that may seem counterintuitive, due to the fact that Presidio ISD has a much higher enrollment and larger budget, it is due to the fact that PISD's jurisdiction is smaller, with fewer parcels of land and levies less taxes. Marfa simply has more property value, she said. Marfa ISD's budget does see some relief in the form of grants from the Marfa Education Foundation, a nonprofit that budgets around $250,000 annually to supplement school district programs. And the fact that the majority of the salary for the school resource officer is covered by a U.S. Department of Justice Community-Oriented Policing Service, CIS, COPS, grant. Rivera said the district was taking care not to overspend on items, and teachers were pinching pennies when possible, and being asked to adjust thermostats to save on energy costs when they leave school for the day. The staff has been really great this year, Rivera said. I mean, they know where we're at financially. They try to not buy as much, and we're trying to be kind of strict, too. She said the district should be able to save some money this school year by being completely closed one day of the week, Mondays instead of Fridays, and not running bus routes or using utilities, unlike last year, where a handful of Fridays saw the campuses operational for Shorthorn Success Days. Board President Teresa Nunez said she was worried about having to further deplete the district's savings account to cover the deficit budget again this year. We don't have much more to go. Honestly, we don't, Nunez said. I know we can't continue like this. When asked if she had any ideas for how to cut down on expenses, Rivera said they could go line by line and cut $1,000 here or there, but the only way to make significant impacts would be to eliminate staff positions. We've talked about where we can make big impacts on the budget, and it's not something that we want to talk about, because when it comes down to it, it's personnel, Rivera said. She said her and Alvarez had discussed the possibility of consolidating into one building, and the general trend of enrollment decline was continuing this year. Our enrollment is dropping. I would be very surprised if we reach 200 this year, and that impacts a lot on the district, Rivera said. Our property values are going up, our enrollment's coming down. If we had more kids, it'd be great. Alvarez warned that serious talks were coming, especially around this coming December, when it's time to start hiring for the following school year. Board Vice President Yolanda Jurado asked whether or not the district should consider selling other property it owns but doesn't utilize around town. Alvarez and Rivera said it was a possibility, but many of the lots were oddly shaped and unlikely to sell, like one that wasn't even large enough to fit a mobile home. School board members agreed it was something to potentially try for, as is the sale of other surplus items. Board member Stella Fuentes asked Alvarez if he and Rivera were brainstorming other ways to generate more revenue. Board member Paul Hunt joked that frisky neighborhoods produce more students, right? Which was met with laughs from the board. Alvarez ultimately agreed the issue is about just increasing students, he said. Jurado and Fuentes encouraged Alvarez to meet with Fort Davis ISD Superintendent Graydon Hicks, who piloted a new private-public school partnership this year, in which dual enrollment earned FDISD $1.5 million in state assistance, up from its previous $70,000. Fuentes said Marfa ISD could consider a similar program, perhaps investing in a new administrative position to pursue the partnerships before a potential voucher program gets adopted. The simple math shows that it's worth the investment and time, and who knows how long that will be available. Capitalizing on that now is paramount, Fuentes said. I think it'd be worth talking about in greater detail and understanding what that means. The board agreed to keep researching and generate ideas on how to save the school district's ailing budget. Now is the time to brainstorm, Nunez said. Nonprofit Restoring Marfa ISD's Hunter Gym seeks alumni stories by Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Friends of Hunter Gym, a nonprofit organization restoring the 1941-built historic adobe gym on Marfa ISD's campus, is seeking Shorthorn alumni to participate in an oral history project about the building and its past inhabitants. The oral history helps to bring the building back to life because it's been vacant for a while, and it really does bring context to what we're doing, said retired architect and Friends of Hunter Gym president Mike Green. The building right now is just an empty shell, but it contains those human experiences that are so rich. Hunter Gym was constructed by the Works Progress Administration, which oversaw projects at the Blackwell School and Fort D.A. Russell around the same time. Thought to be the only surviving adobe gym built by the administration in the entire Southwest, the gym was closed to students and faculty in 2010 after the discovery of mold. While the building remains well constructed, several modifications made over time, infilling of all 35 windows, a roof replacement that directed rain to the building's perimeter, and more, introduced harmful levels of moisture to the adobe structure. By recording the voices of Shorthorn alumni that experienced the gym in its heyday, the group hopes to imbue the project with deeper meaning beyond repairs to its peeling plaster and buckling wood floors. They're not just going to rebuild the gym, they're going to have stories to go with it, and that's important, said Tony Cano, a Marfa High School Class of 1961 alumnus, assisting the nonprofit with the oral history project. Green said recording oral history interviews is an integral part of the restoration process, one that brings in new team members, gets people energized about the project, and helps with fundraising. Since the building dates back to the 1940s, there's also a sense of urgency to meet with the eldest alumni before they pass. He emphasized that the project is all-inclusive and not just focused on the Mexican-American community. Some of these Shorthorn athletes are in their mid-90s. We want to hear their stories, Green said. The more people we can get involved, the better and more successful this oral history journey will be. We want your story. We'd like to interview you for history, Cano said. Green said interviews may be conducted on the phone or in person, and the group is willing to travel to meet with alumni and perform interviews in Spanish. Friends of Hunter Gym will pursue grant funding for the oral history project, he said, and make interviews publicly accessible online. The group is seeking to gather a wide range of experiences, from athletes that played under Coach Borden Bodie Hunter, the gym's namesake that took the Shorthorns to three consecutive state basketball championships, to those with memories of donkey basketball competitions where players shot hoops while astride actual mules. Cano, who attended Blackwell School before integrating into Marfa ISD, said he wanted to get involved with the Hunter Gym Restoration Project because he thinks it's a very worthy project that allows him to give back to his hometown of Marfa while preserving local history. "I'm a firm believer in history like Blackwell," Cano said. "It's very important to have the history of Marfa for the generations to come. They need to know what Marfa was like, what it is now." He said coaches he played under during his time at Marfa ISD instilled in him the desire to do something in life, to not give up. And he has fond memories of playing basketball, watching the girls' basketball team, and taking the SATs in the gym, in addition to hanging out in the grassy, tree-shaded area outside of the gym, in between classes and after school. Cano said he is excited by the idea that Hunter Gym will one day be open to the school district and to the public again. They're going to use it for events for Marfa, meetings, parties, games again, open for so many things, Cano said. He has been busy tracking down Shorthorn alumni and said one of his goals is to locate the oldest Marfa High School graduate that was present when the gym opened in 1941. A difficult task, considering that individual would likely be in their late 90s or early 100s. In addition to the Oral History Initiative, the Friends Group, which began leasing the structure from the school district around a year ago, is raising funds for the development of a master plan that will act as a roadmap for the long-term preservation of Hunter Gym and pursuing grants, including a Texas Preservation Trust Fund grant from the Texas Historic Commission. The group also recently selected San Antonio-based architecture firm Fisher Heck Architects to help with the restoration project, a group with extensive experience restoring historic adobe buildings. A limited selective demolition plan to address moisture damage and halt it is also underway, Green said. If you are interested in participating in the Hunter Gym Oral History Project, please reach out to Tony Cano at 915-256-4014. TonyCano32@yahoo.com or 120 Lanell Drive, Canutillo, Texas. That's CANUTILLO 79835. For more information or to donate, visit at Hunter Gym Marfa on Instagram, Facebook.com/HunterGymMarfa or HunterGymMarfa.org. Photo courtesy of the Friends of Hunter Gym, staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Archival images show the Hunter Gym in its heyday when it was used for Marfa ISD's sporting events, dances, and more. Today, the once active gym sits vacant, the peeling plaster a sign of moisture in its adobe walls.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, July 18th. Parent addresses school board on new Title IX rules. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. At Monday's regularly scheduled Monahans Wicket Paiute ISD school board meeting, Sonia Mitchell addressed the Board of Trustees as a concerned parent about the agenda item regarding approving the 2024-2025 student handbook and code of conduct. Quote, "I am here to speak about the 2024-2025 Title IX regulations that will become effective August 1st of this school year. In reading the new regulations, the U.S. Department of Education has provided clear rules to help schools meet their Title IX obligations to eliminate sex discrimination in their program and activities. Furthermore, the U.S. Department of Education also held its first ever nationwide virtual public hearing during the pandemic and conducted a careful review of federal case laws to support its comprehensive review of current Title IX policy and development of the regulations, Mitchell said. Mitchell continued as the three-minute time allotment counted down. Quote, a case that drew nationwide attention was Everett D. Arnold versus the Barbara Hill Independent School District. This case was entered into the U.S. District Court, Southern District of Texas, on August 17, 2020. It is my genuine hope that come this school year that our district will take heed to these new regulations. The district cannot afford to lose federal funding, so the board needs to do the right thing and follow the law. In closing, I hope that, as elected officials of the school district, and with the new school year fast approaching, that you consider the policies and do not infringe upon the students' and families' right as stated in the laws. Thank you for your time. End quote. Title IX is a federal civil rights law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex in educational programs or activities that receive federal funding. The law was enacted in 1972 and was initially aimed at stopping male-dominated academic disciplines from excluding or discriminating against women. Today, Title IX also protects students from sexual harassment and assault and prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. Schools that do not comply with Title IX may face termination of financial assistance from federal funding. Dress codes can't be explicitly discriminatory, which means that while dress codes may specify types of attire that are acceptable, these requirements may not differ based on students' gender, race, religion, or other protected characteristics. Under federal laws protecting against discrimination in education, including Title IX, Title VI, and the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Guarantee, public schools cannot enforce a dress code based on gender or race-based stereotypes about appropriate dress or appearance. For example, a public school cannot require girls, and only girls, to wear skirts or dresses, or require boys, but not girls, to wear short hair. This also goes for special events and occasions, such as prom, graduation, or yearbook photos. For example, while a public school can require formal attire to be worn at special events, it may not require that girls and only girls wear gowns, or that boys and only boys wear a suit. Quote, just so folks know, we don't make those handbooks up ourselves. We get the basic guidelines from the Texas Association of School Boards, who sends it out every summer, MWP ISD Superintendent Chad Smith said. Along with approving the 2024-2025 student handbook and code of conduct without changes, the board also approved the MWP ISD employee handbook. The student handbook can be viewed on the MWP ISD website, or you can request a printed copy from your child's school. In other business, business manager Katie Jones requested a budget amendment of $350,000. Quote, when we set the budget up for this year, we thought we had allowed enough for utilities, but that is not the case. We could not have known at the time how much of an increase we were facing with all the new facilities and additional square footage. We are cooling a much larger area and using much more water than expected. Electricity has increased $100,000 over what we had budgeted, and water is over by $38,000. I went back and looked at the 2021-2022 school year. we spent $333,000 on electricity. In 2022-2023, it was $335,000, and now I am estimating $530,000, Jones said. The board approved the amendment, and the $350,000 will come from interest earned on the school's financial general fund. At the end of the meeting, the board adjourned to go into closed session to discuss the new employee contracts and recognize the upcoming resignations. Upon returning to open session, the board voted to approve the employees on the specified monthly contracts, subject to assignment, as recommended by the superintendent for the 2024-25 school year. This motion, made by Armando Flores and seconded by Steve Fine, approved for the coming year are Jessica Goebel, kindergarten teacher, 10-month contract, Megan Barmore, music teacher, Parkway, 10-month contract, Gage Winkle, Walker Junior High band director, 10-month contract, Sylvia Stevens, cosmetology teacher, licensed instructor, 10-month contract, Lucas Spear, district police officer, 11-month contract, Gabby Gonzalez, 7th grade math teacher, non-certified, Taryn Greiner, teacher, Parkway, MHS coach, non-certified, Isabella Leva, 4th grade teacher, Parkway, non-certified. Resignations recognized were Griselda Armenta, Parkway, ELAR teacher, Jessica Porras, MHS aide, Monica Cano, secretary, Walker Junior High, Stephanie Clayton, Parkway, 5th grade teacher, and Miranda Morrell, Parkway, 4th grade teacher. The resignations required no action because they will automatically become effective upon contract expiration, Smith explained. In regular business, the past meeting's minutes were approved by the board, a brief bond update was presented by Smith, and the newest board trustees took their oath of office. The next scheduled meeting is scheduled for Monday, August 26th at 6:30 p.m. in the Administration Building Boardroom at 606 South Betty. Any individual who has a concern or question can request to be placed on the board meeting agenda. Anyone interested in addressing the Board of Trustees needs to pick up a registration form from the administration office. Individuals may only address issues which are listed on the agenda, which is posted 72 hours before the meeting day. They must be registered to speak by 12 noon on the day of the meeting and will have 4 minutes to speak. The public is encouraged to become involved in affairs concerning our students. Escarcega places second in the Skills USA Nationals. In a remarkable display of skill and determination, Joanna Escarcega of Walker Junior High School captivated audiences at the Skills USA National Leadership and Skills Competition 2024, held recently in Atlanta, Georgia. The prestigious event, which took place from June 23rd to June 29th at the Georgia World Congress Convention Center, encompassed well over 100 different skilled and technical occupational competition divisions and drew over 6,000 competitors and around 10,000 volunteers from across the United States. The competition itself involved 3 days of orientation, competing, and debriefing that demanded a blend of technical precision and soft skills crucial for success in today's competitive job market. Joanna navigated the challenges with poise, maintaining focus throughout her demonstration and earning accolades for her performance. The pinnacle of Joanna's journey came during the 4-hour-long awards ceremony, where she clinched second place nationally. Amidst an atmosphere thick with anticipation, the state of Texas, along with Joanna's name, was announced among the top competitors, Wisconsin received first, Texas second, and West Virginia third. This is clearly a strong testament to her hard work and dedication. Joanna's journey in the competition centered on the Job Skill Demonstration Open Division contest that falls within the Texas Education Agency's Human Services Career Cluster, specifically focusing on cosmetology. Her technical demonstration underscored industry-specific competencies, adhering meticulously to technical guidelines, and demonstrating proficiency under pressure. Quote, "We are extremely proud and excited for Joanna. Her hard work and determination have culminated in a remarkable achievement. She has not only represented Monahan schools with distinction, but has also exemplified the spirit of Skills USA to the district, state, and national levels." Skills USA advisors and teachers, Christy Burkett and Bailey Burkett, said, "Supported by a dedicated team of parents, teachers, and advisors, Joanna made history as the first middle school student to represent Monahan schools at a Skilled USA national event. Skills USA, a career and technical student organization, or CTSO, has served as a pivotal force in developing workforce-ready professionals since 1965. With membership surpassing 400,000 and chapters spanning middle schools, high schools, and post-secondary institutions nationwide, Skills USA integrates hands-on technical skills with essential career readiness attributes. This fusion is encapsulated in the Skills USA framework, emphasizing personal skills, workplace skills, and technical skills grounded in academics. Skills USA's mission is to empower students to become skilled professionals, career-ready leaders, and responsible community members. Complementing the missions is Skills USA's vision to produce the most highly skilled workforce in the world, providing every member the opportunity for career success. Skills USA offers students the opportunity to experience real live work scenarios before they actually enter the workforce. As the Skills USA competition season concludes, the contributions of supportive parents, teachers, and administrators are celebrated. Joanna's parents, Jose and Jessica Escarcega, were highlighted for their instrumental role in her success, their unwavering support contributing significantly to her achievement on the national stage, and we are thankful for their support. Looking forward, Skills USA continues to champion the development of a highly skilled workforce, bridging the gap between education and industry demands. With a commitment to excellence and innovation, Skills USA prepares students like Joanna Escarcega to excel in their careers and contribute meaningfully to their communities. If you are interested in supporting our students or would like more information about Skills USA and its impact on students' futures, interested parents and educators are encouraged to engage with our local chapters and explore the many opportunities available through this transformative organization. Please contact Scott Burkett, Career and Technical Education Director at Monahans High School. Robotics teacher returns from Space Force. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Monahans High School robotics teacher Michelle Hogan was one of 23 robotics teachers chosen to attend a leadership training program at the Space Force branch of the Air Force located at Patrick Air Force Base, which is part of Cape Canaveral outside of Melbourne, Florida. The chosen teachers were from all across the United States, four hailing from Texas out of 400 applicants. All wrote essays explaining and showcasing their passion for robotics and what teaching robotics means to them. The invitation to each teacher was for an all-expense-paid trip, flight, food, and lodging. The first day after arrival was getting settled in and meeting and getting to know each other and meet the guide group. After that was done, the group was shown the newest addition to the Space Force program, which is a state-of-the-art 3D printing laboratory called the Forge. They were shown an array of various 3D printers and object that had been produced on them, things such as patches, badges, cell phone stands, and other various articles. Quote, "We were allowed to buy any of the patches. The patches, which are actually rigid plastic, are made on their 3D printers and represent Air Force and Space Force ranks, badges, satellites, and many other space-related items and objects. We also learned about the future plans to create a three-dimensional hologram computer program that will display every satellite in space," Hogan said. They learned that even though the Forge 3D printing program is part of the Space Force, it is not funded by the government. The department has to make its own money to pay its way, just like every high school robotics program across this country. They all depend on business and private donations. Quote, "We all had our own rooms, and the dining facility was beautiful. It was open-air dining under a tent canopy that looked like a beautiful wedding reception dining area setup with a view of the pristine beach and ocean waves. We were paired with another person who was our wingman. We were assigned to keep track of each other at all times. My wingman, Krista Lawrence, was a college professor from New Orleans," Hogan said. On day two, the group got a tour of Cape Canaveral Space Shore, which covers over 2 miles of beachfront and is home to 27 launch complexes, which include the Kennedy Space Center, Space Force Museum, Elon Musk's SpaceX Launch Complex, Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin Launch Complex, as well as a National Weather Service station. Fish and Wildlife have a division there because Cape Canaveral is a large wildlife sanctuary. Quote, "One of the really cool things we did on day two was meet the robotic guard dogs. They are truly awesome, and there are many of them patrolling the whole Cape Canaveral area. They can and will attack all while recording everything around the area, including complete weather details," Hogan said. The group was allowed to remain in the command center and observe the Space Force crews monitoring weather conditions in preparation for a SpaceX rocket launch. When the weather conditions were getting right, the group were taken up on a rooftop where they got to watch the SpaceX rocket launch. They also met the Space Force chaplain, Major Daniel Kareeves, who spoke to the group about the relationship between space exploration and the spiritual side of humanity. Quote, "We each got a copy of the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, by Stephen R. Covey," she said. "The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is a business and self-help book written by Stephen R. Covey. The book was first published in 1989 and presents an approach to being effective in attaining goals by aligning oneself to what he calls True North principles based on a character ethic that he presents as universal and timeless. The book is divided into 7 habits, which are: be proactive, begin with the end in mind, put first things first, think win-win, seek first to understand, then be understood, synergize, and sharpen the saw." Hogan said the major told him he will come to any of the schools to talk to the students free of charge. It is part of the Space Force public relations and public awareness. Space Force welcomes students to come anytime and learn about robotics and the future, especially in space development. There is no charge for room and food while they are there. This is for the students and their parents, who are invited also. They just have to pay their own way to get there. The group had meetings on day 3, where they all shared ideas to improve each one's own programs. Quote, "We talked about why we were there, why we wanted to do what we are doing. It was almost the same answer from all of us. We all agreed that we are there for the kids, for the future generations. We are trying to build the future in these children and teach them skills that will be beneficial for the whole world today, tomorrow, and future tomorrows. There are so many possible career opportunities associated with robotics, and we want the kids to be exposed to all aspects of the field," Hogan said. Hogan said she learned how important robotics will be to the future of so many aspects of life, whether it is space exploration or everyday life. The MHS robotics program is growing with a list of names already for the coming year. Robotics offers students many future career opportunities. The MHS Robotics Wolfpack team is working hard to gather donations for the coming year. They need to have a minimum of $6,000 by the beginning of school to pay their entry fees for the January competition. The team needs tools, toolboxes money, sponsors, and volunteers. Anyone who wants to help in any facet can call Monahans High School and talk to MHS Principal Daniel Sharp. MEDC considers purchase of second Main Street property. Taco Bell, looking at Stockton property, plans second site visit. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahans Economic Development Corporation board members met in executive session at the end of Monday's regular meeting to discuss purchasing a property located at 721 South Main Street, owned by James Nelson Lee. The 0.1805-acre tract of land, which is located next to Sonic Drive-In, currently has a home on the property but does not have a listing price. Quote, "Although the property does not have a listing price, based on what we paid for the next-door property, we are estimating a good starting point at $8.72 per square foot," MEDC Director Ashley Adalto said. During the last meeting, the board approved the purchase of 719 South Main Street, which is located next door, from owner Maria Lujan for $99,500. The home was listed at $87,000 and sits on a 0.0288-acre tract of land. Quote, "Both properties will be investment properties, and the two lots together will be a larger lot than where HTO is located. As we look for businesses moving into town, this is where they are looking for property, in the center of town where the traffic is," she added. After reconvening into regular session, the board approved letting Camilla Blum with Heritage Real Estate negotiate an offer on the property. Commissioner Precinct 4 Eddie Nelms and his crew will assist MEDC with the demolition of both homes and clearing of the properties. In other business, the board acknowledged a project update from The Retail Coach. The Retail Coach is a retail recruitment and development company in which MEDC signed a service agreement with last October at a cost of $36,500 for a 12-month agreement. Services of the recruitment companies are analyzing the retail market in Monahans, determine retail opportunities, site marketing, identify retailers and developers for recruitment, marketing, and branding, active rectification, and ongoing recruitment and coaching. Based on the update presented, Taco Bell's corporate is planning a second site visit and is currently looking at two possible locations, 1204 South Stockton and a privately owned property off the interstate. The report stated, quote, "The franchisee is awaiting final approval from corporate to move forward on getting things started with the city, and this will be an amazing win for Monahans," end quote. Other updates included, Whataburger, franchisee is using a broker out of Lubbock who is hoping to drive through Monahans in the middle of August to look into the market a bit more. He did mention that he plans to additionally drive through Pecos, but isn't speaking with anyone in that community like we have been with him. We will reconnect with him in 3 weeks by sending over site options again so that he is prepared for his tour. Wingstop. They are still interested, but they would not be able to consider sites here until closer to October or November, given their current site pipeline. Starbucks. After further discussion with the store development manager on the corporate side of Starbucks, they continue to let us know they have everything covered from the Monahans market. Denny's. At this time, Denny's does not have a franchisee willing to expand into Monahans. Although the board was happy with the report as presented, board member Mir Elena Sines told Adalto, quote, "One of our goals for Monahans has been a grocery store, so on the next report, I would like to see those updates as well, regardless of the feedback, good or bad. We are paying them a lot of money, and I would like to see that," end quote. In final actionable items, the board approved a proposal for a MEDC mural project for $10,000, which will be painted on the side of the MEDC building facing 8th Street. Quote, "The mural will encompass the economic development of Monahans into the project, such as the interstate, airport, golf course, and the sandhills. A little color will go a long way," Adalto said. Since the wall is brick, Adalto told the board the wall may need to be plastered first before painting, and she provided a sketch to the board of the potential mural by artist Lori Andrews. In regular business, the directors approved the 2024-2025 fiscal year budget, the 2024-2025 administrative service contract with the City of Monahans, a replat of Lot 1 Mission Village, accounts payable totaling $61,550, which included $10,380 for payroll and salaries, and $15,748 paid to Amerigroup LLC for the Flume Revision Final Draw. $31,000 was paid to Westward Metal Building for the concrete and awning at the fitness court. $3,358 was paid to Maverick Engineering for Block 26 paving, water, and sewer plans. The financial report, reflecting a balance of $3.5 million in available funds as of June 30th, and minutes of the June 17th meeting were approved. Directors present were Richard Irwin, Leticia Rodriguez, and Mary Elena Sines, Kathy Anthony, and Chad Beard. Grand jury indicts two on injury, abandon, or endangered child. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Two Monahans residents are facing felony indictments for crimes against children under the age of 15. Members of the 143rd Ward County Grand Jury handed down a pair of indictments for Rebecca Lynn Esparza, age 67, of 3500 South Helen Street, for abandoned or endangered child, a second-degree felony, and one indictment for Tyler D. Eaton, age 29, of 210 South Betty Street, for one charge of injury to a child, a third-degree felony. Esparza was first arrested on the two charges on March 6th after two children in her care were found walking in a roadway unsupervised. According to court records, Ward County deputies responded to the 3100 block of South Helen around 11:15 a.m. to a call about two toddlers walking in the roadway, one with a laceration to the forehead, without supervision. Deputies later determined the children left a home in the 3500 block of Helen Street, four blocks from where they were found unsupervised, and Esparza was unaware the toddlers had left the home. The indictment was handed down on July 8th and states, Esparza did knowingly abandon two children under the age of 15 and expose them to an unreasonable risk of harm or imminent danger of death or bodily injury by letting them run into the roadway unsupervised, and she did not take the children to be treated for injuries sustained. In the second case, Eaton was charged with allegedly punching a child under the age of 14 in the face. Officers responded to the 700 block of North Allen on April 28, 2023, around 3:37 p.m., in reference to an assault. Upon arrival, officers spoke to a 13-year-old juvenile and Rachel O'Gean, who said Eaton had assaulted the child and the child had blood on the right side of his face. According to Monahans Police Department Chief of Police Christopher Quintana, quote, Eaton was attempting to discipline the child for misbehaving, and the child was fighting back. Eaton allegedly punched the juvenile in the face with a closed and open fist, end quote. Eaton was not on scene when officers arrived, but a warrant was later issued, and he was subsequently arrested on May 11, 2023. The indictment was handed down on June 13th and stated, Eaton did knowingly cause bodily injury to a child under the age of 14 by striking in the face. Esparza's bond was set at $10,000 for each charge, and she remains in custody in lieu of posting the $20,000 bond. Eaton's bond was set at $15,000. He remains in custody in lieu of posting the bond. In both cases, the court put a protective order in place as a condition on the bond. If convicted, Esparza could face 2 to 20 years in prison and or a fine up to $10,000, and Eaton is facing 2 to 10 years in prison and or a fine up to $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.